Well, I got to tell you, all the information you need, you got to go to Coast to Coast AM. We have some really great people working on it. Right now, check out a couple of the feature stories. Just want you to be sure to do it because we got video. It's mystery object. It streaks across Siberia again. This was just a couple days ago. Locals are, baffled once again, seeing a mysterious bright light in the sky, and got video on that. Also, this is cool. I've just been cleaning out one of the closets growing up as a kid and found my old Rubik's Cube. Guess what? 7-year-old cracks the Rubik's Cube in 8.7 seconds. I never figured that one out. I figured out the triangle one. I guess that one's pretty easy, but I never figured out the cube. 8.7 seconds. You can learn about that there too. And the hottest story we got right now, the doomsday scam. Aspiring bomb makers, yep, including ISIS. They've desperately tried to get their hands on a lethal substance called red mercury. There's a reason that they never have. So that information and more, it's just full of great stuff. Again, one of the best websites ever. It's coasttocoastam.com. We are taking your questions with Bobo. It's our last hour. He's sticking around for you. Okay? So you stay with us too. Coast to Coast AM, thanks for being here. We are back and we're taking your questions on Coast to Coast AM for Bobo, Finding Bigfoot, the show that's on Animal Planet. And he said that it is going to be back on again. Hey, Bobo, before we take this next call, one of the other questions I got all over my email is they want to know about your necklace and where they can get one.
Oh, I guess my buddy Steve Valencia, the abalone spirit carver, he's always claiming he's not doing it anymore, and he says it's the last batch, and a few months later he will make it, do some more orders. But yeah, if you Google abalone spirit carver, that's him. And then, I saw some really nice work. I know Steve's pretty busy. Hold on 1 second. I just got this guy's cards right here.
Sure. Go ahead and give his number out so we don't have to find it on the bathroom wall or something like that, I guess, huh? We're talking with Bobo of Finding Bigfoot, and he's got some information. He's pulling out somebody's card.
Is it okay to give this guy's name?
What, is this for the necklace?
Yeah, it's another guy's. I'm on an Indian reservation right now, and there are some of the natives that were wearing these carved abalone pieces, and he made some Bigfoot ones that were beautiful. They're bigger than mine, but he sells them. They're, I guess, $100. Because, it's pretty hard to carve that stuff. Like, they shatter a lot. And his name's, he's a native guy from Northern California. His name's Michael Tui Miali, like Tuiimyali. And I guess his Facebook, I haven't even looked at his page yet, but his Facebook is Abalone Art, Michael Tui Miali.
That's pretty cool then. So we've got two different places that people can get something like that. And that is pretty cool. It's very distinctive seeing that on your neck without a question there. So we're going to go back to the phones here. Wild card line one. We've got Anthony who's been hanging in there out of Philly. How are you, Anthony? Oh, we lost Anthony. I know we've been hanging on. We've got a ton of phone calls though. So let's go to wild card line number two with Todd out of Everett, Washington. And we're going to go, down to three. Sorry about this. Melissa at Wolf Point, Montana. Let's talk to Melissa. Are you still with us, Melissa?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, sorry, it's been a long time there. Yeah, good to hear from you.
It's worth it. I just want to tell Bubba that we enjoy watching Finding Bigfoot here. I have a question. What is probably the best evidence or the most compelling evidence that you have ever found or one of your colleagues, that really, would, I guess make scientists stand up and say, yes, there is another creature out there and it supports the evidence of Bigfoot. And where was it found?
What do you say, colleagues, mean on the show or just like Bigfoot researchers?
Bigfoot researchers, any of the colleagues, anybody that's on the show or anybody that you have actually, gone out Bigfooting with or have, associated with through your whole Bigfoot career.
I'd say, Bob Giblin's a really good friend of mine. He's part of the Patterson-Giblin film. I think that you know, Bill Munt in his book When Roger Met Patty proved that that's, you know, through scientific and through science and math, proved that that, you know, is definitely a Bigfoot, not a human. It's not one, you know, magic bullet, you know, silver bullet that, you know, is proving it. It's all the evidence when you take it together. And like this clip always says, hold on a second.
I'm doing an interview.
That's funny. Now that's funny. Is that not Bobo or is that not
that's
Bobo?
That's one of the producers that are just coming back from the bar.
That is so you, Bobo. That's great. I love it. The personality shines. You're loved by all.
And then,
that's funny.
It's just everything, you know, like you can go to a small Indian village in the Olympic Peninsula, Washington, and find 250 Bigfoot eyewitnesses. And then you can go down to like San Diego or LA and talk to a million people and get maybe 20 or 30, you know, and it was people hallucinating or making things up, or you'd have, it'd be an even number of sightings. There'd be more sightings down in San Diego and LA than, you know, it would be proportional. And you don't see that. You look at where the rainfall totals are across the U.S. and it corresponds perfectly with, you know, the amount of Bigfoot sightings and the track evidence. I mean, Dr. Meldrum's gone on ad nauseum about that. I mean, there's plenty of information out there about that. You know, the congruency of the tracks and just the, you know, when they, that's what's so good when people can cast multiple tracks in a trackway, is you get that variability which you'd expect to see in a live living foot. And the hairs, there's a, I don't know why this wasn't studied more, but they're doing, they're putting more effort into now doing, looking at the hair morphology, like the platelet structure. Mm-hmm. And the Sasquatch hairs turn out to be pretty unique. And there's nothing else that matches them. And so that's pretty exciting that these hair experts are getting in on that. So let's see what else is there. I think some of those, like the Brown footage that Stacy Brown Jr. and Senior got down in Florida, we had on our show, that thermal clip where it steps between the two trees. Cliff spent a lot of time. Cliff, you know, Cliff's a brain. He was a physics major before he switched over to jazz guitar in college. I mean, he's a bright guy, and he spent a lot of time doing the measurements on that. And that thing, you know, it's about 7'9", and you can, you know, you can go to the exact spot. It dwarfs me, you know, when I walk in the same spot it did. It's just, things massive, you know. I mean, so you take all the evidence as a whole, and it points to there's something out there, something worth further study.
Well, I live on an Indian reservation here in northeast Montana, and so although I had never seen anything myself, of course, you know, the stories here, like you said, Native Americans believe in it 100%. They're all sure that there is something there. But I've also had stories that I've heard from my husband's coworkers that live further out from the little town we live in, and, you know, more on the ranches, that have had disturbances in the night with some of their animals, and they've said, you know, they have seen things moving, and they've talked about the horrendous smell, that it's really, you know, whatever the creature was walking, standing up, and it really made the other animals kind of nervous. And there would always be this really bad smell that they could smell. And so that person was convinced that that's what's here. Now, living in northeast Montana, we don't have like the huge mountains and things like that, but I'm right here at the Missouri River. We've got a lot of buttes and, you know, big valleys, and it's tons of deer and elk. And so I would think that this is probably a very good place, you know, with, I guess,
which reservation are you on?
Source, a water source and everything for them to be.
Which res are you on?
Fort Peck res.
Okay. Yeah, there's reports out of there for sure. There's a lot of reports from out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people, there's a misperception that they want, you know, giant mountains with old growth forests, and I mean, they live in a variety of spots. I mean, they're nearly as adaptable as humans, and they're yeah, as long as there's just, you know, enough cover for them to get under, you know, as long as there's some 8 to 10 foot tall shrubbery and trees, and there's some water and some food around, they'll make do.
Well, I think this is a good area because, I mean, you know, like I said, a lot of people around here have said that they've seen things or heard things, and I don't know, maybe one day going down Highway 2, my husband and I will finally get to see one. That's what I'm hoping. And so, well,
yeah, don't be surprised.
I appreciate it. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Yeah, never be surprised when that happens. Just be ready for it, right? Let's go to Wild Card Line 4. We got Jack in Canada. Hey there, Jack.
Yeah, good morning, Connie and Bobo.
Morning.
Thanks for hanging in.
You both. Hey, I got a question for you, Bobo, and it's, I want to get your comment on it, I guess. You know how they've tried using those, what do they call them, trail cameras with the infrared lights that they can put up at night in order to try and catch pictures of Bigfoot walking through the trails?
Right.
Now, I saw something on TV here a little while back that suggested that they weren't successful with those because apparently the infrared light they put out is visible by some animals, and so they just, you know, walk away from the light, as it were. And the speculation was that Bigfoot may also have that same light sensitivity. So I'd like you to talk about that if you're aware of it, but also, early in the show, you also talked about a new kind of, star camera or, you know, star gathering.
Oh, right, right.
Use night vision. That's where I'm looking for a device that you'd use. So if you could comment on those two items, I'd be most grateful. And, I do really, enjoy your show, and I'm really enjoying you listening to you tonight too, Connie.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, I've always said, I tell people when people tell me, like, hey, you know, because a lot of people don't want them on their property and don't want them coming around their place, and I tell them just put up a game camera wherever you don't want them coming around. They'll avoid that area usually. And I've always said that they can see that infrared spectrum. I think also that it's not just when the, I think, you know, that when they're out in the woods and, you know, it's windy or whatever and there's leaves falling or bushes are blowing or whatever, an animal goes by or a bird flies by and it sets off that flash at night, they see that flash off. It doesn't have to be them that set it off for them to see it, so then they're aware of it. And it seems that they have, I mean, their brain case is at least as big as ours. And, you know, they're not writing symphonies and building suspension bridges and designing airplanes. Like, all their brain power goes into evading humans and feeding themselves. So, I mean, that's a lot of focus.
And that's as far as we know. I mean, they could be, you know, developing into some other dimension, and who knows what they're building on that side.
That's true. that could very well be, but at least in this 3D world. And so, right. I mean, a lot of people speculate they got an incredible memory, like they memorized their surroundings so well. So they just got a mental checklist of where all those cameras are so they can avoid them. But they do walk in front of them. They're not perfect. They mess up. But it's documented. There's plenty of animals that can see the infrared. And even if there's no infrared on the cameras, they detect the electromagnetic field. And they've done studies with coyotes and some other African animals and deer. And they sense the EMF and just are aware of it. So, I mean, I don't mess around with the game cameras anymore. And it's not just the ones that, a little trick I learned was that they'll catch moonlight at night, you know, so I never face them south. I try to face all my cameras north so as to not to catch that moonlight. And I even turned off the flash and just hope that one would walk by in the daytime sometime when I was doing the, but my game, oh, Wally gave me several game cameras I used for a few years, and I never got, and I got everything else but a Bigfoot, so I just thought I'm going to focus on getting thermal footage.
Right. Well, that was Jack out of Alberta. The other question he did have was, do you remember what the camera technology you were talking about that was very new that you were excited about?
Yeah, my computer just took on a fritz this morning, but I think it's going to work right now. I'm trying to Google it right now to see. I thought it was called a Falcon camera. It had nothing to do with the Falcon project.
But it could could see better than the thermal? Was it the same kind of technology?
No, it's totally different. It really turns. I didn't see it in pitch black. I saw, you know, there was residual light. There was like a parking lot light not far away, and you know, it was a clear night. But it really was like looking through daylight. I mean, it was like looking. It turned it into, as you look through it, it was literally daylight.
Well, a lot of time with the thermal, it seems to just only go so far. And, you know, when you guys are in thick woods, you don't see anything.
Yeah.
So
they're
pretty sounds
limited.
Like this is better.
There's some new, there's military grade thermal that's awesome. I mean, we're dealing with, you know, old technology, what we're using.
Right.
FLIR lets us use a few things once in a while. Then Fluke's coming out with some, like, civilian type things for like squatching and that sort of thing. They're more focused on industrial, but they're coming out with models that are similar to the FLIRs, and we're talking to them right now about getting to use some of that stuff. But when we were at the FLIR headquarters, I mean, they've got incredible units that are military oriented and stuff that's an R&D that's next generation, that I'm friends with some of the engineers there. That's really mind-blowing, and if you could get that out in the field, I mean, if the U.S. government put effort into finding Bigfoot, you know, if they put the effort they put into finding Osama bin Laden and finding Bigfoot, the mystery would be over in a week or two, you know.
Well, that's my question to you. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, okay, let's go back a little bit. You know, when O.J. Simpson was taken into custody, nobody was out hunting for somebody else, right? So
right.
It's because, as if they, you know, felt like they knew who it was, kind of. That I'm just saying. Some of you, you know, I don't want to get into all that, but it's kind of like, why aren't they looking? Maybe because they already know, you know. Because why wouldn't you? If somebody said, "Oh my gosh, this eight foot hairy monster is outside my house and trying to get in," I mean, wouldn't they try to go hunt that down? And wouldn't somebody of authority be concerned about these things unless they already know?
Yeah, I don't think there's like this secret. Well, I've got all kinds of conspiracy theories, and I'm pretty
sure.
And I don't think there's this well orchestrated thing about Bigfoot.
But wouldn't you chase the monster out in the woods? I mean, if there's something lurking around and it's everywhere, wouldn't you go if you're like of authority? You know what I'm saying? There's got to be, if they're not chasing it down, maybe it's because they know something. Anyway, that's a mystery we'll all be trying to figure out. More with Bobo here. The last segment's coming up, and we're going to be taking your last questions here, and we want to thank him for being a part of tonight and sharing his wisdom with us. So it's Coast to Coast AM you're listening to. Thank you very much for being with us. Get them while they're hot here with Coast to Coast AM, the charity CD, Holiday Magic Coast Style. It's available again for the holiday this year. And even George Nori has a special performance there. So go to coasttocoastam.com to find out more and order right there. And our last segment with Bobo, get your questions in with Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for listening. Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis, along with Bobo, that recognizable voice that you hear. Bobo, because people know your voice so well, you would be a great cartoon character voice, without a doubt. It's very recognizable. Maybe Family Guy will pick up on you sometime there.
I tried out for that actually one time, but they said I didn't have enough acting chops.
Are you kidding? That's hilarious.
They're going to try me out for a bear or a moose or something.
Well, it should have been a Bigfoot. What are they thinking?
You're talking about the conspiracy stuff in the government.
Yeah.
Lyle Laverty, who was the deputy director of the Department of Interior, he was second in command under Salazar with Bush. He was, he totally, he's the guy that took the really good photos of the Patterson Goon trackway.
Right.
Trackway photos.
Yeah.
He was a ranger up back in the 60s, and then in, I think it was 72 or 73, he had his own personal sighting over by High End Palm. A good friend of mine, not a good friend, but a guy I knew pretty well, we're buddies with, old guy his age. He was actually real good friends with Laverty back then out there, and Laverty went into great detail, so he knew about that. And then also, I met a retired congressman, a seven-term congressman from Kentucky, who used to have breakfast once a month with Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul and a couple other guys in Congress that that had seen Bigfoot. And he said Mitch McConnell had seen it twice and Rand Paul had seen it once in Kentucky.
Well, that's that's interesting.
And they would talk about it like they didn't have some big inside scoop. They'd all went to the Department of Fish and Game, whatever that office is, the director's office in Kentucky, and had him pull out whatever files they had. They had, he said 100. I remember he said 106 files that they thought were legitimate, you know, reports of incidents over the years. So, but it wasn't like they had some special knowledge, you know, insight into that. So I don't think there's this orchestrated cover up, you know. I think it's kind of a combination of other things.
Well, I don't think those people would even know. I think it kind of goes back to the extraterrestrial thing where, I don't want to go, oh, it's conspiracy. I don't want to get into all that as well. I mean, we have a lot of people that can definitely talk to that. But when people are seeing things legitimately and authentically, like you and myself, and then nobody in a position of checking out to see what it is, especially in a world now where, you know, so much attention goes when they see a box, a strange box in a hallway. You know, why wouldn't they go check out something in our airspace that we don't know what it is, or something gigantic in the woods? I mean, so when that happens and nothing's said, I don't know. I just, you got to wonder, you got to question that. Why wouldn't somebody come out? I mean, I had immigration people just the other day come over to our place because somebody had an anklet bracelet. They cut it off and threw it in our yard. And so when they're chasing that kind of stuff down, I don't know. It's just like, why would they not chase some 8-foot beast that's like, throwing big rocks or knocking on people's windows and doors, which I hear happens quite often,
too. They'll check it out, but it's just rangers. They have a flashlight, and that's about it. You know, I mean, they don't have any special. They're not sending out these well-equipped units to go look for Bigfoot. You know,
I know. Yeah, I know. You're right. They're not.
They're less equipped than we are.
They are. I know. But when those reports come, you're like, why aren't they checking that out? Because, you know, so many sightings, you know, why?
It could be a career killer. That's why the guys I've talked to that, you know, I know plenty. I get, you know, I'm really recognized in, you know, for people like when people see they associate with Bigfoot, I'm not exaggerating. I'll get anywhere from 2 to 8 people a day if I'm out in public coming to me and tell me their Bigfoot stories. And I get approached by PhDs, high ranking law enforcement, you know, biologists, and they'll say it would kill my career if I came out. So I think that's the biggest thing. And then just the way the news handles it, like, oh, coming up next, this man says he saw Bigfoot. Ha, ha, ha. You know, they make some stupid joke about him.
I know it. It kills me. But this is the decade and century of coming out with everything. So hopefully those people will be just as brave and courageous as us. And hopefully we can get to the bottom of it. That's what we're going to. So anyway, tons more phone calls. Let's try to grab them for you, Bobo. And thanks for sticking around. We know you have an investigation to get to. Let's go to Wildcard Line 1, Clark in Kansas. Are you still with us, Clark?
I'm still here.
Oh,
thank
great.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a couple of questions. You know, James, I don't know if there's any shows that they're putting that are competing with you folks and the, you know, evidence gathering that you folks do on the show. But I know I saw one of the Discovery shows talking about that they had a solid, this was a sample that was gathered up in northern Canada that they had to literally fly in there to get to where this place was. It was a cabin.
Oh, yeah, Snow Grove Lake.
Yeah, and that was like, a hair went on the back of my neck. I'm looking at that and saying, wow, that is tight. They got blood evidence that it stepped on that board and his foot, and the way he tore the door down, it wasn't like a bear. He's like, he was doing, the destruction was not bear, you know, they could compare it to, they could tell, and they start throwing rocks, and while they were there on site, they had rocks thrown back at them from the thick, you know, from back,
yeah,
you know, further enough.
Dr. Meldrum.
Yeah, and I wondered if you had any, you know, they said they gathered hair from that, and that there was chimpanzee in it. Is this a relic? Is this a relic branch that we're talking about? That's what I'm thinking, and it's a relic branch, maybe close to Gigantopithecus, but maybe just a little bit smaller than that one. I'll take my answer off the air.
Great, Clark. Thank you.
I'm not an expert on that stuff, but I do know the guys that are involved in the most cutting edge, and the guys that are getting the best results on the Bigfoot DNA is the computer gets confused, and the closest it can get to is human and chimpanzee. It's somewhere close to that, but the computer, it has to have a type specimen. In the computer for it to compare it to, and so the computer gets so far along in, you know, whatever, 98%, and then it just veers off, and I'm not sure exactly how the program expresses it, but it doesn't say conclusive, and it just says, it either goes human or chimpanzee, but it says not this, but close to this are the two closest.
Wow. Well, the story that he brought up was an incredible, creepy, scary story. And I would love to see some follow-up on that myself.
Yeah, we almost went there, but I don't want to get into it. We got more calls. But, yeah, I've heard Meldrum tell that story a few times, like the unedited version, like in the great detail. And there's no doubt there was Bigfoots up there.
Oh man, that was good stuff. I mean, the board with the nail straight up like that, and then the silhouette of the foot, that was absolutely crazy. Let's go to wild card line five, and that's Ray trucking in Louisiana. Hey there, Ray.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. You guys are having a real nice conversation. I appreciate you letting me in my two cents worth.
Sure. What would you like to say to Bobo?
Okay, you know, I'm not really familiar with the program, Bobo, but I appreciate your efforts seeking the truth and whatnot. But I'm coming at it from a little bit of – I'm just kind of a little contribution maybe. I don't know if you're aware of the law of one material that was channeled to some investigators, UFO investigators, back in Kentucky, maybe back in the 80s or late 70s, early 80s. And, they made contact with this higher dimensional being, Ra, the being that supposedly built the pyramids, according to himself. He told these people this during the channel. Well, anyway, the guy was Don Elkin was a UFO investigator, but a mechanical engineering professor at some university in Kentucky. So he asked the guy all types of questions, including the question about Bigfoot. And the higher dimensional being said that this race, Big Feet, came from another planet. They'd blown their planet up. They used to be like us, fully conscious, not fully conscious, but conscious beings, like, you know, human beings. But they blew up their planet somehow. And, you know, this is in the PDF. You can read it for free online. Just search, you know, World One, Bigfoot, and you'll come up with all the material that you talked about regarding that. And he said that they came to this planet because if the planet was in this solar system, our planet was the next one very similar to theirs, climate-wise. And they've taken second-dimensional beings because it's easier for them to work off their karma. In other words, second-dimensional beings are like dogs and animals that don't retain a sense of memory from, you know, yesterday, a week later, you know, years ago, that kind of thing. They're more or less living in the present all the time. So anyways, that was just my little bit. I threw that at you. Maybe look up the law of one material. Thanks for listening to me.
Yeah.
You know what he's talking about? Yeah. I didn't realize Kentucky was that big in it. But what do you think of that stuff? Because that's very interesting. Thank you for that information.
That I've heard, I used to be really into that stuff because I had a bunch of UFO sightings back in the late 80s, early 90s. Coincidentally enough, my very first Bigfoot investigation I went on, where it wasn't me reading something in John Green's books or something in the newspaper, but where I knew the guy and he told me he saw one that day up outside of Redwood National Park, and I was driving up there with a couple girls from school, just getting a ride with them to go camp up there and go look around and find the tracks, and which we found. But on the way up, we saw a UFO, and then we saw five more that night later on, and it was changed my life. But it was kind of funny. It was my first real UFO Bigfoot investigation. I saw a UFO, but so I know the UFOs were real, and I know they weren't some kind of military craft. So when I hear people talk about communicating with them and stuff like that, it's I know it could happen, because that first night I was with those two girls. The one girl was from Sonora. They were both from Sonora. They were real familiar with the whole UFO phenomena, and they said, "Yeah, you can concentrate and communicate with them." We were watching the UFOs flying around the sky. They just flew these random weird patterns. I don't know why you'd come across the galaxies and then fly these weird random patterns, but that's what they were doing. There was one green one kind of pulsing soft and flying a little less like jaggedy and erratic. Just was smoother. And I looked at the girls. I said, "Do you think that's it?" They both said at the same time, "A female." I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, let's say to it, if you're a female, spin in fast, tight circles." And we all started concentrating that question. And within literally 5 seconds, the thing spun in tight little circles. So I know that those things are there. I know that you can communicate them, you know, thought projection, whatever you want to call it. And so when people tell me they've had these other experiences, I don't know what to make of it, you know, because you hear so much different stuff, and I've heard conflicting things, and I know some of those people are nuts. Some people, you know, are telling the truth, and I just don't know. All I can say is I don't know.
I know, and that's kind of the fun, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, trying to learn and listen to each person, and everybody's perspective is different even when they tell it. And, you know, I've had people tell me, and Stan Gordon, of course, is really great at talking about the UFOs and the Bigfoot scene at the same time, the different stories that he's gotten out of Pennsylvania. But, you know, I've people down in Alabama talking about, besides lights in the skies, at the same time they're seeing these things and the basketball size orbs, but also men in black and the black SUVs, and very strange when this, I remember them talking about, I guess it was an SUV, but it was a black vehicle, and the guys weren't friendly. They didn't get out of the car or anything, and they just kind of went into the woods where these guys would always go Bigfoot, and they knew what was there. And it was a very strange time during that little town as well, and a little hush-hush, and lights had just been seen in the sky when those things showed up, and that's where all the Bigfoots are hanging out, and they believe there's a couple tribes there. And it's just, it's just fun to talk about it as well, yeah, as try to figure it out.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting enough, I took a trip with my dad to the Hickory Apache Reservation in 2004. As we were driving there, we were listening to Coast to Coast, and they had a UFO expert guy there, and he was talking about Dulce Mountain outside of Dulce.
Yeah.
Where we were going, and he was saying, if you drive up there, it's chained off, there's gates, men in black come up the right away, there's UFOs coming out of the mountain. And the very next day, my dad and I drove there. We drove up to the top. No, there was no gates, there was no big fence, there was nobody, there was no sign of anything. No one came up to harass us. And so I'm just like, well, this guy, and he sounded kind of nuts the whole time we were driving. And I was like, this guy's supposed to be an expert. He's respected in the field. And maybe they can change. Maybe that stuff was there the day before or whatever. But yeah, just.
So you saw nothing.
Yeah. So, anyways, I don't want to talk about that. I mean, I know we got more.
No, because we're wrapping up. But I've been out to Dulce twice. And you go out there in the day, I mean, you just like, okay, no big deal. Nobody's coming to me. Nobody's talking, you know, no big deal. You go there, not, I was there twice, and both times, unbelievable activity that scared the heck out of me each time. I left very quickly with the people I was with absolutely frightening. So you try that sometime again, or go with me. I think I'm a magnet for this stuff. So trust me, if anybody wants to find anything, take me along. It will show up. I don't know what it's about, but hey, Bobo, I want to thank you for your time and sharing your experiences and research. Where can we find out more about you? And is there anything else you'd like to say to us before you go?
I just want to give a shout out to all the truckers. I know those guys who listen all the time, and all the bands that are driving in between gigs right now, going from city to city, you know. I know there's a lot of guys driving cross country that listen to the shows after their gigs, and give those guys a shout out. And I got a site, my website's getting redone right now. It's jamesbobofay.com, F-A-Y. But it won't be another week till it's all gone. I've got a store put up there and all that, and a newsletter. And so, yeah, that'll be, they can sign up for the newsletter now, and I'll start getting that going here in the next 2 weeks. So that's jamesbobofay.com. And then on Twitter and Instagram, I'm at Squatcher. I don't get on there a whole lot. Then I got a Facebook page, James, Bobo and Fay - Finding Bigfoot. That's my page. Those are the only ones that are really good. There's a bunch of fake ones out there, but those are the only ones that are me.
Well, we appreciate your time once again. Thank you very much. And we appreciate you guys out there as well for listening to us, too. And if you enjoyed the show as much as me, and please write in and let us know, because we are here and we want to bring you what makes you happy as well. So from the 840 WHAS studios of iHeartMedia right here in Louisville, Kentucky, I want to thank a lot of people out there. Bill May, Kelly Carls, Kirk Wesley, Tim Banal, Lex Lonehood, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Dan Galanti, Tommy Danheiser helping out tonight. Yay! Sean Ladasur, Trisha Pepe, Nathan Staten, Lisa Lyon, George Knapp, and of course, George Norrie. Schrader's got it over this weekend, but Norrie's going to be back on Monday for you. So until we meet again, keep watching the night skies and continue with me to seek out the strange and uncover the unknown. For Coast to Coast AM, I'm Connie Willis.